this the last time.
We did?
Yeah, oh. Everybody was here.
I didn't remember, but I read the minutes.
You thank you for reading my minutes.
Before we start, and as it's recording, just an announcement that
yes.
Mayor Michelle has.
I got your message.
Okay. I just wanted.
How could she go to someplace give you more time than here?
You don't see the hours that I work.
Thank you for coming in over the weekend and signing the checks.
Yes, thank you very much. Do you have your copies?
No, I don't.
Do you need copies?
Yeah,
probably a copy. Oh.
Yeah, I had actually had difficulty getting connected to the internet
over
the weekend. So.
All right.
Minutes.
Here's the actual package. Here you go.
Thank you.
Oh, I have my own. Thank you.
So?
Okay, call the meeting to order. Roll call.
Mayor Nelson?
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Colicott?
Here.
Public comment? Seeing no public comment. Assume no public comment. Review the April minutes. Is there a motion to approve the April minutes?
So moved.
Second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Approve the minutes. So now we go to review and discussion. Independent audit.
I'm going.
Boy, this is like sanitation district meeting.
Okay. Before you...
Which one are we starting with?
We can go ahead and start probably with the report on communication of governance. That's probably the most important one of issue. And this is we get the four letters or four documents from the auditors. But this one kind of goes in a little more detail, and it goes about the communication with governance as council. It's the... Do you want another copy of it?
No, I should have a copy. Oh, here it is.
Okay.
It's a letter from...
Yeah. It is. And this is what they do is they go back through the audit and kind of put it in layman's terms, like, hey, this is what we found, this is what we didn't find,
but
this is what we
tested. I have one question to this. I always thought this was something that's supposed to be done up front. They always seem to do it at the end.
No, they send out an email, and they ask council if there's any issues or areas that they want, you know, to be looked into. And council has, in the past, typically reached out to them if they did. And some council members have. And they would pursue the information that, you know, that was in question or in the area that they want to be looked into. And then at the end of the audit, this is kind of their summation of, based on our basic, required.
I just always thought that the report on communication with those charged with governance, I thought always came up front, but maybe it doesn't.
Yeah, no, it comes after the fact of telling them what they did and what they found. But they send an email to all council members.
I know about that.
Just ask for information on that. So basically this is saying in a snapshot what they did. You know, all the different the key areas. So on page 2, what I want to highlight with you is they talk in each of the paragraphs. One is difficulties encountered performing during the audit. They'll have like little bullet points, and they will say whether there was a deficiency or not. So we'll go over these. The first one is in the top paragraph. It talks about the disclosures of contingencies. And management is not aware of any outstanding assessments, and as of the date of their letter, claims disallowed costs or noncompliance with grantor restrictions. And so they're saying that based on their audit, they concur with management's
essentially, we go through it, they found no exceptions.
Right. Okay, no. Yes. Does that mean that the...
insurance issue that...
The
you know,
gate closed, now my truck is... addressed here?
It is addressed, and that was specifically asked to look at it addressed. And so on the very last page, one more page, the back of it, is basically like a management rep letter. A management comment letter, sorry. And they're telling us to management, hey, this is something that you should do. Basically, it was our policies and procedures. And the third recommendation down there, or the third paragraph, states that they recommend that the city consider updating its accounting policies and procedures and codify them into one document. Now we have several little ones that haven't actually put into one. So they're saying if you have it all in one, it's going to be easier for everybody to know exactly what to do. So addressing the issue of insurance or, you know, find that, put everything in one spot so everybody knows where it's at, kind of is the theory. And then what they've also recommended is that the updates that in their audit.
Especially when turnover occurs.
There you go. Yeah. It's going to be key. But what they're recommending is that you have it done by March 1st.
What is interesting, too, is we asked them, or she asked them, Councilwoman Fasinelli asked them to look at the insurance issues and the, you know, for the health insurance issue and for the gate incident. In both instances, they didn't feel there was, in the insurance, they felt there's no additional liability that's significant that should be noted. They've been fair, it's open, transparent, and she's going to want something more. So I suspect when it comes to council, she'll make a big deal of it. But just in fair warning, the auditors were very comfortable.
What does insurance have to do with the audit?
It does. I believe what the question was is, was the transaction appropriate?
And insurance?
No, I'm
talking about insurance.
No, I know, but I'm coming around to that.
Okay. We're thinking health insurance.
Yeah, I know.
Okay.
But still, I don't understand what the issue is.
Oh, you're talking health insurance?
Yeah, I was talking health insurance.
Well, let's finish with what you were talking about.
Okay.
Okay, go with the gate.
Okay, so for the gate issue, the question was that an appropriate expenditure? And they said, okay, based on your controls and what you state that you're going to do and how you handle something, yes, you follow procedure. However, the insurance, if it states in our policy, which it said that the city manager was to set an incident report, that wasn't done, that is a policy that can, we should follow our policy, is what they're saying.
Okay. Same reiteration of what was said at council meeting.
So that issue was addressed, and therefore, that was it. Now, the health claim,
this is the issue she feels about the payment of prior year's health for the council members.
And that'll be discussed in our closed session.
Wait, the payment of the prior year's health.
The prior council members.
Prior council members.
Right.
Oh, she was asking, should we pay for the prior
council? She believes there's a liability that the city has responsibility to pay. I don't want to speak for her because she's researched it pretty well. But in her interpretation, that is contrary to our city attorney's interpretation, that she believes the city has a liability and we should have been paying more along the years, so there's a liability that should show up in our books. There's two issues here. One, the liability only exists to the extent that somebody were to pursue litigation against us for reimbursement. That's the one issue. And the second issue is, do we actually have that liability? So there's one is a potential liability that would have to be ruled against us. The other is, do we have that liability in law? Now, our city attorney does not believe we have that liability in the first place, so we couldn't subsequently have a liability to begin to carry over.
Let me ask this question, though. As I understand it, some of the prior council members, we pay a portion of their insurance.
PEMCA, correct.
Yes.
But then that means it's just like any other organization that pays part of their previous employees' health insurance. And there's a liability associated with that. It's called other post-employment benefits.
Well, we began paying it. The question about when we began paying it was in 2015. Mm-hmm. And they're saying her interpretation is the law was in effect in
99.
So the delta between 1999 and 2015, she thinks, is a potential liability. If you interpret it
No. This is a benefit you gave them in 2015.
This was a decision by the council in 2015.
It was. I don't recall that.
It was, well.
It was.
How it occurred is it was on, in 99, a resolution was written. And per discussions with the attorney, what it looks like is that we are to pay the minimum PEMCA liability, which is approximately $100 a month, give or take. And that is for the council members that are deemed retired, ease under PERS wording, not a retiree that we normally think of. That's where some of the issue comes up. Secondly, when we required to record OPEB on our books in 2015, we had an actuarial assumption and realized that, okay, this is the dollar amount that we're supposed to be paying. So we began paying it in 2015.
So we recognized the liability, then you said.
In 2015, and
2015.
Right.
But her issue is that we had liability.
Retroactively, we didn't go back and correct.
I thought we had liability
for
We do, and that's shown and that's addressed.
Now, why is she thinking to go back to 1999? Because that's when PERS implemented.
Yes,
that's because when the
we just implemented for them in 2015, right?
No, it in theory, the way the resolution reads, which we found it in 2015, that we should have been paying it. That was, and so the issue was, as the talking to the attorney and PERS, they're saying you've paid, the insurance has been paid, the council members were paying on this assumption that it was a self-pay go, you know, pay as you go. Mm-hmm. Therefore, once we started paying it, it wasn't an issue. And
how many did we pay it for?
Now five.
Five.
Yeah.
So it's $100 a month. $500 a month for...
With the statutory limitations of only back...
That's the other issue is that it's, I think it's a four-year statute of limitation. Four or five-year.
I don't think it's five.
The city attorney gave an interpretation. There's a statute of limitations how far back...
It's $500 a month. That's what, $6,000 a year for how many years?
Well, the city attorney would argue that it's maybe at most...
You said four years.
It would go back from the date of today... Go back, so it would only be 2 years.
2 years.
Well, 2 years. So it would be.
And that's been deemed by the auditors as an insignificant liability.
That's $6,000, $12,000. It is insignificant. Even if we do have a liability.
That's what the auditors had suggested in their response.
And that's what the attorney.
But and the attorney. That will be contested by one of your fellow council people. I'm just fair warning. I don't think there's anything.
And to one a bit, what benefit to the city?
No benefit to the city.
It's a liability.
What you're saying,
we have a
$12,000 liability.
I mean, how is she benefiting the city by contesting?
But why is it, you say it can only go back 2 years.
It was the year of the date of the, it being, I believe you said a lawsuit or a claim.
It would have to be a claim filed against the city.
As of that date. So you go back as of, we're
and
in 2018,
you can only go back 2 years.
You can go back. Four years. We've already paid for two.
Oh, okay.
So it's only two. Does that make sense?
So it's 2015. They started paying.
Now. Okay, till now.
So it's only a two-year.
But I still don't remember when we authorized it in 2015. Do you?
I don't either.
It wasn't authorized. It was when we did the OPEB valuation.
Oh, it came up then.
Yes.
But you didn't tell the council, though.
No, it came up, and we talked with the attorney and PERS, and they said, just start
paying. No, I'm saying, but you didn't tell the council.
I usually don't make the communication with council, so, correct, I did not specifically.
I know I didn't remember approving this, but you said it came up in the audit, and they said you should have been paying it.
It came in through the OPEB valuation,
yeah,
yes.
OPEB valuation.
Yes.
So they were looking at that as one of the OPEB.
Yes. Right, we went out and got an actuarial to value it all.
I understand now because I know we didn't approve it.
So. Yeah, well, it wasn't something new. It was something discovered.
Uh-huh.
And so at that point, we called PERS and with the attorney, and this is what transpired.
Okay, now does that mean that all former council members get $100 a month?
That was the whole scenario. How it reads... And how the city attorney is deeming it is that it is for, in my layman's term, the sixth with Freshie at that time would get this PEMCA because they were deemed at that point in PERS's system as a retiree, kind of, lack of a better word, grandfathered in. Everybody else, it says self-pay go.
Well, that was they had to be in there in 1999.
Right. Yes. So okay. that was how we're interpreting it.
But then it subsequently has probably changed, I guess, since then.
What?
No, something it's self-pay forward going for
it. No, but I'm saying something changed if the new ones don't get it.
Well, in 99, the resolution stated it as a self-pay. From that point forward, you would be a self-pay.
So since they were already getting the benefit in 1999, they deemed those were grandfathered in.
Correct. That's what I'm saying. They were grandfathered in.
Right. Everybody from 1994 has been paying for freight.
Right. Exactly. That's what I was trying to say.
Very specific about how that goes. There is an issue. We have a closed session. We'll have to discuss a claim, but it's kind of a broader claim that we'll address about this. But that's in closed session on the 28th.
Okay.
And
is related to this?
Kind of secondarily, and it's kind of more complicated. Todd's got a working paper he's going to provide before,
right?
And we'll talk about that. But that's again, we're going to recommend denial on it, and so does the attorney, and so did our insurance company. And you know, we've gone through this process, but that's jumping the gun on from this issue. The one that she's talking about is specifically
All I can see is a $12,000 liability at the most.
I think city attorney would agree with you.
Yeah. I mean, that's the best.
I don't want to speak.
And that's got a minimum liability.
Yep. And the auditors have said very clearly that they view that as an insignificant liability.
It is.
That does not need to be differentiated in a separate footnote.
Mm-hmm. It seems pretty clear. I agree.
So,
well, since we have city attorney and auditors, I think that should be sufficient. And I certainly agree with the auditor's recommendation here. We ought to have, you know, what I feel about written policies and procedures.
Mm-hmm. You're a stickler on those, and we agree.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So in a nutshell, that the governance report kind of summarizes all the reports. I'll go over, you know, the next report here is on, they do an opinion on the internal control over financial reporting and compliance with other matters based on an audit of financial statements provided in accordance with government auditing standards. And in the midst of all their wording, their audit did not find any deficiencies in internal control that would cause a material weakness, and that is what an audit is to determine. The next section talks about compliance and other matters. Again, the results of their tests disclose no instances of noncompliance that or other matters that required to be reported under the government auditing standards.
So GASB, we're requiring with the government accounting procedures as we know them, and they know them by an outside view, which is...
This is what you.
What I would say is a clean bill of health that they're saying you're following the rules that you're supposed to be following.
Right.
And they discovered no errors.
Material weaknesses that would
change the outcomes.
Exactly. And then the next one-page report is our GAN limit every year. This is kind of similar to the agreed-upon procedures that we had over the internal controls in the beginning of the year. If you remember, we had that audit on our internal controls over all cash, and basically they say. They'll tell you exactly what work they performed, and then the result. Was there a weakness? Was there?
And the GAM, let me recall, is the Prop 4 from way back when, which says your expenditures can go up only a certain value amount each year, the 2%.
And so basically,
there's a formula for calculating.
It is. Yes.
Yeah. This is the one where. We weren't paying for this in the past, were we?
It was just lumped in to the audit fees.
Lumped in.
Yeah.
So they split it out this time. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
But it says we're complying with
that. Yeah, so everything in there,
I wasn't aware that we had to pay them to review the GANS limit till this year.
Yeah, no, it's always been, not always, the previous audit firm just lumped it in.
No, it says in the rules, it says that you have to have it audited.
Yep.
But I wasn't aware of that.
I'm not sure I fully understand the GAN limit. That says you can only...
The GAN limit says that it's Prop 13, which says your property tax can go up. The GAN limit is basically an appropriations limit that your budget can only go up based on a base year. And so it's a mathematical calculation
on
your property taxes and everything else. So it's a stepped up over X number of years, and it's calculated very intricately.
Yes.
And you have to go through steps and prove it. There's assessed valuations. There's all external numbers. It's not like we get to create anything.
Mm-hmm.
And you cannot have appropriations in excess of that in your budget.
Okay.
Now, we are well under the GAN limit.
Do you have a copy of our GAN limit so I can show them?
I can get you one.
Yeah.
Before we leave, we don't.
Okay. Yeah, sure.
But the calculation basically says that your budget can never exceed that appropriations limit.
Mm-hmm.
It was It was the implementation of Prop 13, basically. So in 1978, when Prop 13 passed, then like a year or two later, Prop 4 was passed, and this is basically Prop 4. So the implementation is clearly designed to say you're capping government spending.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what in reality, what it does is I don't think that anybody that I've ever encountered has ever capped near their GAN limit, because the calculation was so high to allow for contingencies and disasters and da-da-da-da. Because if you go exceed that, you have to ask for voter approval to exceed that. So that's what the GAN limit is.
Okay.
In a nutshell, the calculation is very. It's like, think of your most toughest problem in calculus or whatever. You go back and that's what it is. It's like, and it's very formulaic and very. It is submitted to the state auditor every year, or state controller.
Okay.
state controller every year, and they buy off on it, and they basically verify that number's accurate from there.
Right.
You know, they review your
as do the auditors. They look at the calculations and verify the numbers, and mm-hmm. they get confirmations outside sources.
Essentially, your source documents are the same, the appropriate, you know, your mm-hmm. assessed value, blah, 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 and, you know, your growth, the economic factors that, you know, the growth
from the county and the state.
Mm-hmm. The cost of living increases mm-hmm. and those kinds of things that are allowed. So basically, it's the 2%. Think about it in the simplest terms, it's the implementation of the 2%, you know, the growth every year that Prop 13 allows.
Yeah.
It ensures that you don't exceed that and say, well, we got around it. You can't.
Mm-hmm.
The only way you would get in GAN limit, well, with the loss of redevelopment, it's almost impossible to do it now. But in the event that there were some gigantic new funding source that were thrown at us from federal or state or something entities or something that could change somebody's expenditures. It's difficult because if you establish even unincorporated, you inherit those calculations from those entities that you just took over. That's part of the LAFCO process.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't just think you take over and get a zero there. You have to take over the revenue
and
the property tax generation, sales tax, everything else they're generating.
Okay.
So long story short, that's what it is. The easiest way to think of it, I always just think of it as Prop 13 and its companion is Prop 4.
Okay. Just going back for a moment to the report on communications. The first bullet here on the first page.
Which one?
This is this one. Report on communication.
Oh, okay. Back to that one. Okay.
Yeah, it talks about capitalizing infrastructure assets. My understanding of this, I just want to make sure I'm reading this correctly. So we've gone through and we've valued like our storm drains and sewers and streets.
Because 90, Gatsby 34 came into existence. Because we were under a million at that time. Our population was under the 10,000 threshold. We were able to implement later. And when we implement later, we don't have everything. We weren't required to have everything inventoried. It's anything that's put into existence after that date. So we have anything that we've put into existence after implementation date. And so we don't have everything on our books, no.
Okay.
But that's not a requirement for because we're smaller and they realize that, you know, the resources, because at that point in time, gosh, when that was implemented, literally people were going out counting trees. I mean, like, it was crazy. I mean, that was like a full-time job.
Yeah.
So that's the scenario for being a smaller city. You get curtailed. Like, we implement usually a year after things have to be re-implemented so we can watch what the resources of a big city can do, and then we follow suit.
Okay. Do we have our own internal valuation of our infrastructure assets?
Yeah, we have fixed asset listing.
Okay. Yeah. But, I mean, we value it and depreciate it.
Yeah.
And
mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
What is the value of our, roughly, do you know offhand?
No, I don't. Okay. What are you looking
What of all our assets?
Yeah, all of these.
Didn't I remember seeing a number $10 million?
Yeah, that's what I thought I remembered seeing, but I don't remember where I saw it. Yeah.
In the footnote.
Michelle provided it to us once and something.
There we go.
And we should have a balance sheet that has that on it.
Okay, $10
million. Yeah. Yeah.
Good memory, Bill.
Yeah. So these are the categories. Your construction in progress is the projects that are going mm-hmm. on right now. And uh-huh. once they are completed, they will be capitalized and put into our infrastructure.
Net depreciation, yeah.
So $10 million. They'll come right here.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, that you got it broken out there. Buildings, vehicles, tools, and furniture, yeah, everything.
And we have it even further detailed, if you'd like that.
Yeah, no. what you gave us before was just the top number.
Right.
Without the detail there.
So,
So if you're looking for a comprehensive list on our, we do not have that. Mm-hmm. We have everything since implementation date. So, and I'm saying the last probably 10 years, 12 years. So anything that was capitalizable, like, you know, a slurry isn't considered it, but if you dig, grind down, do inches, improve the, mm-hmm. Street value, that would be included.
Yeah.
So capitalizing is not just, you spent money, it has to be improvement to the infrastructure, and then we'll revalue it at that point in time.
Has increased its useful life.
What?
Has increased its useful life.
It has increased. Yeah. Correct.
Yeah. I was just casting about looking for some information that could be useful and, you know, helping to communicate our challenge going forward and trying to maintain all this infrastructure.
Yeah, it's a challenge.
Yeah. But you look at our, you know, sanitary sewers, for example, and, you know, there's a useful life, and there's a condition that it's currently in, and, you know, which is going to be a reduced useful life. Mm-hmm. And, you know, what do we think, looking at in terms of trying to maintain this stuff over the long term?
Right.
So how much should we, you know, kind of use that to try to gauge, well, how much are we spending an adequate amount maintaining this infrastructure so that, you know, we don't have a disaster and we don't have come on to a shortfall. It may not happen during my term, but maybe the next guy
is
maybe left holding the bag.
Sure.
So, but apparently we don't have that information yet. So.
No, I mean, not comprehensive.
Okay.
Not comprehensive. Any other questions? Lastly, I was just going to point out in the actual audit report, it's in standard. There was
this is the larger
the larger document.
Let's see. We go to starting introduction.
Their audit report is on page
and
one.
And their profile. Let's see. Local economy. This is. They usually have a...
Keep going.
Their
auditor's opinion?
Yeah, the auditor's opinion.
The MD&A goes before that.
They got a lot more in this one, so it must be another one.
It should be page one of that. I mean, what you're looking at, your eyes...
That's your page. That's your guys' page.
Yeah.
It? Okay.
So
here's the organization chart.
This is the
official.
This is the audit opinion.
Arabic number one.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, here's the internal audit report. This is the one.
Yeah.
What it said, present fairly in all material aspects. So it means a clean audit.
Yep. That's what I was going to say. And there's no major changes in the format of how we've reported in the past. So there shouldn't, I mean, it should flow from previous year to this year. But all in all, the numbers are accurate according to our audit. And again, it's an independent source review of everything that we have and that what we present to them. And they do outside confirmations with other sources that we deal with to verify that our numbers that we say are accurate. So it's not just looking at our internal documents, is that they compare it. So if you have any...
Yeah, see, start with the first statement in that position. They have the assets there, capital assets, less depreciation.
Right, that'll be in the... page 18, maybe?
Page 14.
Yep.
Because all the other stuff is manager discussion analysis, which comes from you and Steve. Manager discussion analysis.
Yeah.
You write that portion.
Right.
Right, okay.
Yes.
And this portion where the accountants start here. You got $5 million in cash, $10 million in assets, and miscellaneous other stuff to give you over $16 million in assets. And liabilities, which is very good. Liabilities, less than $2 million. Mm-hmm. And most of that is pension liability. Mm. Oh, yeah,
That's also going to be on our agenda.
The 28th. We'll have the discussion parts.
Okay. And other post-employment liabilities, that's for...
That is for the PEMCA. For, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's where that $12,000 would have gone in
there.
You could make that $200,000 if you wanted it. I think that's the discussion.
What is deposits?
That is any of our monies that we have for the bonds. Like anytime somebody does work on their house, they have to come in $2,000 where they get a street bond or a pool bond. And then when they finish their project.
They get it back. That's the ones where you write all those $2,000 checks.
Yeah, the two.
Those are always the last things in your check roll.
Yeah,
they usually are because they're not a routine check, so we don't set up a vendor for them.
Investment in capital assets. See, again, it shows a total amount restricted for public safety, public works, and unrestricted.
And the unrestricted part is where our general fund reserve is as well, which is at 1.5.
What is note 6 11. For?
Note 6.
For pension. Under deferred inflows of resources. I still never understand this inflows and outflows.
Okay, yes. This is the beauty of government accounting. It's enjoyable. This is the requirement that we get from, this year we got it from GovInvest. We have to get an actuarial report because we used to get the report from PERS.
Okay.
And PERS would have everything documented out because we were a pooled policy. And our plan, I'm sorry. So now we go out and we have to get a third party valuation because PERS doesn't do it anymore. However, they do charge us to give the beginning information or meat of the information to the actuary. You gotta love that. To create these numbers for us. And basically, it is just the journal entry to take into account all of the assumptions that have changed over the last year that you had your valuation and put it into a number that as of today, if everything were in alignment based on the assumptions we gave, these would be our numbers that we would have to pay out if the world ended today. And we were. But we all know that they're truly not the right numbers because if we tried to pull out a purse today, it would probably be like $3-4 million versus the million that was there. So,
defined benefit pension plans. Okay. All right.
Do you have any other questions?
Let me see. Look at the rest of it. That's the, was the first statement of financial position.
Did they scrub the city of Lomita out of this version?
No.
Remember the first time they did the audit, they left. They didn't do a search report.
Yes. Oh, how funny. Yes.
This is the balance sheet.
Are you going to the individual funds? Are you going
I'm going to the balance sheet.
What page are you in?
18.
On page 18?
Yeah. 18 is the governmental funds. And this is the true source. This is what we deal with every single day. The net position is when we pool all the money, the numbers together. Because on our general fund and all of our governmental funds, we don't report the pension and we don't report the capital assets in these funds. So this is like your day-to-day activity that flows into the consolidation of the net net position.
And what we have is total of almost $6 million as net position. That's how much cash we have.
But $5.9 million.
Yeah.
Yep.
And then this is.
And again, that was as we
reconciling
were
this to the other one.
If you had, well, if you look at the governmental funds, you're only going to see 5.3 because you have your proprietary fund of 8,100 that's got to be added back into that. And then you'll come to your $5,300,000. So if you took page 18 plus the cash on that, plus page 22, the cash on that, that would give you the total cash on page 14. They just kind of all flow up. So if you took this 5.3 plus this 81, will give you your 53. Mm-hmm. 5.3. So that's kind of what it is. It's like this is the mass consolidation, and then you, as you get further back, you get detail.
Page 24, statement of cash flow. Am I reading this right that your cash flow was $4,681 for the year?
Well, what this is for your proprietary funds. This is what you do for your proprietary funds. And this is only our, what?
Oh, okay. What's a proprietary fund?
Okay, this is for our employee benefits. So money that goes out and then it's a net effect.
Yeah, I see. Okay. Do they have a cash flow for the entire?
No, it's not government reporting. You only do cash flow statements for proprietary funds, which are enterprise and internal service.
Well, it seems you would do for the whole organization. Wouldn't you want to know what your cash flow is for the whole organization? Were you draining cash or you increasing your cash?
Yes, this is a governmental report, so it has the information.
It doesn't have to make sense, is what you're saying.
Yeah.
Okay. This is received from internal users from Employee Services. This is all a note to the financial statement. Should be it then, isn't it?
Yep. Yeah, and like I said, after the notes, all you have is the detail that flows up to the consolidated. So if you wanted to specifically look at the air quality management improvement fund, you could look at it in complete detail.
I see.
It links up. And
notes, page left intentionally blank. Required supplemental information.
General fund, gas fund.
Mm-hmm. Oh, here, resource of revenues, expenditures, change in fund balance. Oh, here, this gives what your revenue, what everything was versus the budget, actual original budget, found budget. This is the one where you have the changes in the budget. And then
what
the actual, huh?
What page?
56.
This is page 56. It shows revenue and expenditures, budget, your revised budget, actual variance from the final budget, and what the 2016 was. For example, we had a total of 3.2 in revenues.
Correct.
3.3.
Correct.
Which was about right on, almost right on budget.
Pretty much the taxes. Went up.
Yeah, tax is a major part, 2.7. And expenditures were, expenditures were way down versus budget. $825 less than budget.
Well, that was because we postponed our street project.
Oh, okay. So that was in it.
And then,
most of them in capital, 640 in capital outlay.
Right. I mean, that's typically, you see that flow every other year. You see 1 year is really high and then 1 year is lower, you know, just because of whatever project or because the expenditures are only accrued back to the time that when it was incurred prior to June 30. So if it wasn't complete until the next year, you know, you have to straddle that.
So we budgeted a loss, but we made a gain, almost $500,000. And then we had, we wound up the end of the year with $3.7 million.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, the general fund.
Which is $850,000 more than what we budgeted for.
Yep.
And then spending fund with actual revenues. Net pension liability. They seem to have an awful lot of schedules in here, pages for a small city. I've seen other more complex governments that don't have this many pages.
Well, this is what, if you're not going for a CAFR, you don't have to have it in there.
Okay.
But we have typically tried to put as much detail in there for transparency and, you know, for disclosure.
Tell me, what is a CAFR? I know it's
Comprehensive Annual Financial Report.
I know that's Comprehensive Annual Financial Report. Mm-hmm. But what is that? How is that different than just a financial report?
If we did a complete CAFR, it would have all the, there's a supplementary
Oh, that's the things that we didn't buy 1 year
right.
to put in
right.
there.
We haven't, council has been, city manager and councils have said that it's not necessary because we've never got into debt. So mm-hmm. usually a full CAFR is for bond positioning, you know, seeing
okay.
if we have the health of the city.
Okay.
So that additional information, the statistics aren't necessary for
okay.
our city. However, all of the meat of the information, like the MD&A wouldn't be in there. There's a lot of things that would be pulled out, but we
okay.
feel like it's helpful and useful. So
we do all these schedules to comply with CAFRA.
We do. We do. We put everything in there for mm-hmm. the comprehensiveness of it. The only thing we won't pay for the additional statistics that we don't
statistics
really use.
Do we still qualify for that government?
No. Because
we don't have to have a CAFRA.
We have to have the statistical sections in there.
Oh.
That is the only thing that we're missing.
Seeing we would have done that to get the government thing again. Can we do that this year?
We can. I mean,
because we seem to always get, we always got it every year, didn't we?
Got it. That I went for it. Yep.
And how much does this supplemental cost?
You know, we haven't done it in three, maybe 4 years. At back, I would say it was about $1,000.
Is that all?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Okay.
And then you have, I mean, and then there's, probably another 200 to 400 versus, you know, for applying.
Oh,
so
okay.
1,500, you know, ballpark, 15 to 2,000. If that's something that wants to be done, that can.
Okay. I don't have anything else. You, Bob?
No, I'm good.
The plan would be to put this on the agenda for the 28th for full council.
File and receive.
I'm sorry, file and receive. But we just, obviously, before we go there, we go to this committee first. So that's, I appreciate you guys being willing to
yes,
meet
thank
beforehand.
You.
Back.
It's always my contention that if you have a committee to look at it, it ought to be on a consent calendar.
It will be.
Okay. Yeah, it's just receive and file
okay.
on consent.
All right.
Which, we'll see where that goes. Okay, so that's all we had for the meeting for budget finance.
Okay.
You want to adjourn?
So if nothing else, we'll adjourn the meeting now.
Okay.